today I have with me Ann Lee Hussey, a polio survivor who has made the eradication of polio and the alleviation of suffering by polio survivors her life's work. Over the past several years, she has participated in 28 volunteer National Immunization Day trips overseas. She was recently honored as a White House Champion of Change for her humanitarianism and contributions to public service. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
So you and I met at the York Hospital benefit, I believe, in the fall.
Correct.
You're from the South Berwick area.
Correct.
You were born, I believe, at York Hospital.
I was, yes.
But you've been all over the world. You've had kind of an exciting life for someone that's that's honestly, you know, a Mainer.
For a little girl from Maine, yes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
Did you think that when you developed this disease that it would send you down a road like this?
Never. If you'd asked me that 20 years ago, I would have just looked at you funny, because actually growing up, you know, my polio, I never thought a whole lot about. And I just tried to be part of, you know, what was going on around me with my peers. But it was my exposure to Rotary, and when I learned about what they were doing with a program to eradicate polio, you know, I thought to myself, why am I not involved in this?
So tell me about the polio itself. It's something that in the United States, most of us don't really think about that much because we're not faced with the actual disease. How old were you when you developed polio?
I was 17 months. I contracted polio 3 months after the very first polio vaccine by Dr. Salk was released.
And so obviously you wouldn't have much of a memory of that.
I don't. I don't remember that experience. Only stories that have been told to me by my mom and my siblings and cousins.
What types of stories have you been told about that? I would imagine for a mother or parents or grandparents, it must have been pretty scary for them to have essentially a toddler come down with this horrible disease.
Yeah, I can't imagine how my mother would have reacted to that. I was the youngest of five and the only one that was affected, but I know that she knew what it was immediately, not only because they'd lived through that polio era, but because her brother had contracted polio when he was five, and so her younger brother. So she'd already seen that happen. So I think she was very scared. And I was initially paralyzed from the waist down. It was a while before she ever told me that. So I can't imagine how a mother must feel when the only thing that her little girl is moving is her head and arms. And please keep in mind, there are others who were far more affected than I. So I feel very lucky in the respect that I'm doing as well as I am today. But other stories that were told to me is my older sister told me about how my mom used to get up every 3 hours, round the clock, to massage my legs and move them to enable me to walk. So I owe her a lot. I owe my mom a tremendous amount. And other stories were my cousins, that just came out a couple years ago, how they used to take me down to the local pond, which is down the road, and she would take my braces off and put me in the water. Little did she know how therapeutic that was.
You know? So they were almost inadvertently doing things that now we actually offer as something,
exactly,
a legitimate means of healing.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, my mother was told by the doctor to do all she could. I mean, I still went to a rehabilitation center as a toddler, but there were many things that my mom had to do at home for me to get me to do that. One of those experiences that I really remember was my mom used to fill her purse with sand, and I would sit on the kitchen table and she would hang it off my foot and make me do leg lifts. So, you know, whatever it takes.
Well, that's a creative approach.
Yes.
That takes quite a woman to say, I don't mind having my purse filled with sand.
My mom was a good woman.
And the youngest of five, too.
I was youngest of five.
So it's not enough that, you know, she's already got five children to take care of, and then on top of that, she gets to work with her youngest.
Right, right. And overall, my siblings, you know, I'm sure there was some jealousy, misunderstanding at age of why I was receiving all that attention, but overall they were very accommodating. And, you know, it was a time growing up in a small town when neighbors reached out. You know, they would bring meals over to my mom, and that helped tremendously.
So does it ever occur to you that it was maybe not the best luck that this vaccine was coming out and that you just happened to contract this prior to that happening?
You know, I don't ever think about the fact that I may have had bad luck. I don't think that at all. In fact, I don't blame anybody. You know, it's a virus, and it happened. And I was young enough to not know any different, so I grew up with the challenges that I had and learned how to face those and overcome what I could and deal with it. And again, I have to tell you that, especially now after traveling around the world, I see so many other people that are so far more affected that, you know, I'm truly blessed. I didn't spend time in an iron lung, which would have been extremely scary. And I'm not in a wheelchair now. I don't know what will come down the road for me, but so no, I don't blame anybody. It's not woe is me. Never, ever has it been woe is me.
So I'm not sure that everybody who's listening has enough experience with polio to know what actually happens when one contracts this disease. And you've already mentioned a couple of things, paralysis and the need to be in an iron lung, and that's because not only do your muscles of your legs, your limbs become paralyzed, but you can also not be able to breathe because there's a muscle called the diaphragm that needs to be able to move in order for you to actually bring air in and out of your lungs.
Exactly.
But that's, I mean, this is scary stuff that was going on, and people would, I think what I'm remembering hearing is that they would close down pools and swimming holes, and people would quarantine their children in the middle of the summer, and I mean, there was a fear around this.
A huge fear. And, you know, especially in the city, because it seemed to, though it did, I mean, affect the country too, but at the time that I contracted polio, there was one of the last large epidemics in the Boston area. And so many parents in the cities would pack up their children and move out to the country thinking they were going to escape the virus. Well, they may have, but it actually may have brought it to me. I mean, there's no proof of that, but there's that possibility. But I have friends who tell me how they were never able to see any of their friends during the summer. You know, at the end of school, they never saw them again until school started up again in the fall. And then they may not have seen all of them. Some of them may have passed away from polio during the summer.
So I'm wondering how it makes you feel as someone who has survived this virus that is vaccine preventable, to hear that some people may have misgivings about vaccines.
It bothers me tremendously, to the point of I get a little bit angry, because I don't think that it's fair that a parent make that judgment for a child when there are so many facts out there telling us that the vaccine is safe and that the consequences of not taking the vaccine are huge. As you said, it's a totally preventable disease. And if you get polio, you always have polio. You know, and the effects are lifelong. So why would a parent take that risk is my question. Why would they do that? There's so much documentation out there that tells us that vaccines are good.
And I guess, at least with polio, more people are convinced that this is one that if they're going to choose amongst vaccines, that this is one that they are willing to have their children get.
Yes, that's true. If they were to travel with me, though, overseas, they might think differently about refusing the measles or the whooping cough or others, because there's still large epidemics of that happening out there.
Well, tell me about that.
Well, when I go out to immunize, you know, on the polio campaigns, we visit villages, and we're reaching all these children up to the age of 5. And many times they will say, well, these children, there's a measles outbreak in this village. And I think back to myself, I don't see that so much in the U.S. We have in recent years. And those mothers will walk miles to come for measles vaccination for their child. Miles. Not only for the polio, but they will walk miles for the measles and all the other ones that the health workers offer.
What countries have you visited?
I've been to India many times, different parts of India. And I visited Nigeria multiple times. And in addition to that, I've been to Bangladesh and Egypt, Niger, Mali, Benin, and Chad, and Madagascar.
And what do you see when it comes to outbreaks of these diseases? How is the community able to actually respond?
Well, fortunately, we've been doing the polio program now for 31 years. And along with the, you know, eradication of polio, we've actually brought a greater awareness to how vaccines can help these individuals, and a greater awareness to mothers for the reasons to come to health clinics. So that's what we see now. We see parents willing to go to medical doctors and nurses within their own countries to receive the help for their kids. And that's a huge improvement over 30 years.
What was it like before?
There were tribal doctors. There were, you know, not medically fact-based doctors, or there just wasn't any access to health care at all. You know, in some of the really remote regions that we've go to, we've actually brought health care to them for the first time ever. So children would die. You know, I was in Mali once, and this really hit home to me. They don't even name their children until the child is at least a year old, because they just want to make sure that the child's going to live.
So. Well, I guess that's one of the things that I'm wondering is, if you live in a country that is probably challenged by things like sanitation, access to good nutrition, access to medical care, then if you have an outbreak, then it's not as if you had an outbreak in a place like Portland, where you have access to the Barbara Bush Children's Hospital and the main centers for disease control. You're talking about, you're already starting from a very different place.
Exactly, exactly. And that's one of the reasons why the eradication of polio has taken so long, because we are working with children who are malnourished and underserved in so many ways, and undereducated and all of that. So when we go to give a vaccine to a child who's malnourished, their immune system doesn't necessarily respond as quickly as it would to a child here in Portland, because they're not as healthy. Chronic diarrhea is one of the biggest killers of children overseas. The same reason, because of the poor sanitation and water that's not clean.
Why has this been important to Rotary?
It's very important to Rotary. We tested it in 1979. I say tested in quotes. When an individual, a Rotarian from the Philippines, asked if they could do a grant, have funds that would immunize the children in the Philippines, because at the time that he was asking, the Philippines was reporting the largest number of polio cases in that Asia region. And we did that, and the success was immediate. We decreased the rate immensely, and, you know, it wasn't long after that the Philippines was polio free. So when you see that kind of proof, number one, we're willing to try. Number two, the polio is only in humans, so there's no animal reservoir or anything, or it would be impossible to do. But more importantly, what the unique thing about Rotary is that we are an army of volunteers all around the globe. We're 1.2 million and growing strong. And it's that army of volunteers who can do advocacy, who can do hands-on, who can get out into the streets and talk to the people in their own communities and make them understand the importance of what they're doing. And I think that has what made Rotary such a strong partner. When we finally did reach out to the World Health Agencies around the world, they knew that that's what Rotary brought, was that army of volunteers, the ability to fundraise, and the ability to advocate. And that's what we do best.
In addition to doing this work, you also work with your husband, who's a veterinarian, and you're a veterinary technician, and you've been working together. You've been married 34 years. You've had a practice for how many years now?
Since 84, so do the math.
So you're pretty busy, and you have this whole other life.
I do have this whole other life. I have to admit that I don't work at the clinic anymore, though. Rotary sort of became my life, and my husband, who's also a Rotarian, realized how important this was to me and said, it's okay, go do it. Go see where this takes you. And so as the first couple of years went by and I became more and more involved, I worked less and less. And so now I don't, I mean, I know all the girls and I go down and I visit and all of that, but I don't have to be at the office because we have such excellent help to do it for me. And Rotary has become my life. Polio eradication in many ways has become my life. I have a passion to see the end of this for many reasons, mostly because of the children of the world. And no child should have to suffer, no child, again, from a totally preventable disease.
What was the turning point for you? At what point did you go from someone who had had polio to someone who wanted to eradicate polio?
Well, remember my uncle was a polio survivor. So he was sort of a mentor for me because I grew up watching how he dealt with things physically and emotionally. And then I learned about Rotary's program, and I had the opportunity to take my very first trip in January of 2001, and I traveled to India. So I stepped way outside my comfort zone, leaving little Maine and stepping out. And it was fun. It was amazing, actually, to see the program, to see the logistics, to see what a tremendous amount of work they were doing in India. But the thing that caught me was when I visited a rehabilitation center. And I've told this story many times. My apologies to the viewers who may have heard this, but they paraded out in front of us a group of school children because they wanted to show off how they were helping, and that's fine. So they all had assistive devices, various sorts. But there was one little girl that I will never forget. And when she walked past me, limping past me, she smiled at me. And I, of course, returned her smile. She was a beautiful little girl. But I looked down at her legs showing beneath her skirt, and there was that same thin right leg, that same heavy metal brace, and I was really overcome with memories of myself at her age. And I broke down. I basically broke down, and I cried. I cried so hard. And I say that I cried for her, but I cried for me. But I cried for all the waste that polio was bringing to so many, especially being there in India and seeing them on the streets. And I thought, I have to do more. You know, I could hear my uncle's voice in my ears saying, if you can just prevent one child, you'll have done your job. Well, I've prevented more than one child after all these years, but my job's not finished. And so I think it's that little girl, it's her smile, it's her perseverance, and it's my uncle's voice that keeps me going.
You still deal with the after effects of polio.
I do.
As an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you get polio, if you're lucky enough to survive, it's always with you.
Always with you. Every day of my life, it's there. And polio has a condition known as post-polio syndrome that can affect survivors anywhere from 30 to 40 years after they have that acute paralysis. And you never know when that's going to hit. And what post-polio syndrome is this extreme fatigue. You can have extreme pain in both muscles and joints. And then your weakness starts to take over. And some people actually end up back in wheelchairs or in leg braces, riding scooters. You know, and here's a disease that they had overcome, that they had triumphed, that they'd persevered, and now it was coming back to haunt them. Not the disease, but the effects. So I wake up every morning and put my feet on the floor and say, I've still got it. You know, I may be a little weaker than yesterday. I may have to hold on to the railings. I may walk slower than all my friends, but I'm still here. And that's how I look at life. I'm still here.
So you've obviously given so much time of yourself that you've been recognized as a White House champion of change. But you don't think of yourself in any way as being close to finished with this.
No, we're close. We are very close. But until we've reached that last child, until we come to zero cases, And then we pass 3 to 4 years without any more. Then we'll be finished.
What is the current state of polio eradication?
We are at a very good spot right now. We are poised, actually, to possibly have the last case be finished this year, in 2017. We never want to say for sure, because you know that polio virus is a persistent little devil and hides out in areas that we're constantly watching. But we have the lowest number of cases being reported. Now stop and think, when we started, there were 1,000 cases being reported every single day, so over 350,000 a year globally. Last year, for 2016, there were only 37 cases globally. We've driven that virus and reduced the area where it's found now into just geographical regions within Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Nigeria, into small regions. We have the tools. We know how to eradicate polio. The challenges that remain are areas of conflict, areas of inaccessibility, rugged terrain, as well as the conflict, and funding. You know, we still need $1.8 billion through 2019 to finish this job. But we have very generous donors, and we think that will happen, but we always need more donors. So anyone listening wants to help the children of the world and be a part of a very historic movement, go to endpolionow.org. But really, we are poised. And, you know, Rotary doesn't do this alone. Rotary works with our partners, World Health Organization, Centers for Disease Control, and UNICEF. And in recent times, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And we're all determined. All of the partners offer their own personal expertises to get us through this. And many thanks for Bill Gates and his contributions. They've been very, very generous. So yeah, I think we're so close. We're so close. We used to put our fingers up and put this little space between them, but that space is getting smaller all the time.
Ann Lee, anything else that you think that people who are listening ought to know about polio and the work that you're doing?
Just again, let me just say, you know, if you're willing to contribute, go to endpolio.org. If you're willing to learn more about Rotary, go to rotary.org. A nice website is the Global Polio Eradication .org website. It will tell you the history of where we've come from, what's happening real time today in these countries that are still endemic. And I have to add that in addition to the partners that I already mentioned, the governments of the world are a huge part of this. And we couldn't finish this job. We couldn't have achieved what we have today without the government's support. And that includes the governments that were the endemic regions, as well as countries like our own and Canada and European that are giving funds to finish this job. So I want the people to know that this is the largest public-private health initiative ever created. It's changing the world, and we're making history. And if you want to be a part of it, come join us.
Well, if I wasn't convinced before, I am now. I appreciate your coming in and speaking with me, and I really appreciate all the work that you're doing to spread the right information about immunizations and about eradicating polio. I've been speaking with Ann Lee Hussey, a polio survivor who has made the eradication of polio and the alleviation of suffering by polio survivors her life's work. Keep up the good work, Ann Lee.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.